Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Bunker Movie Buff Podcast for Episode 2. Today, we are going to be looking at the 1978 Ralph Bakshi adaptation of the first 1.5 books of The Lord of the Rings. Now, for many people, for a long time, this was the only film adaptation of The Lord of the Rings that you could even get. So, we're going to be giving a quick little breakdown of this today, and hopefully, if you haven't seen it before, you might want to see it afterwards, because while it's a bit choppy, it is actually pretty good. So, let's get into it. So, when you first begin this movie, what you're going to see is a red background and basically shadow acting, I guess is what you would call it. It's quite an interesting sequence. You basically see real people, and they are acting out the introductory stuff, for those of you who have seen the live-action Lord of the Rings films, it would be like the beginning of the Fellowship of the Ring when Galadriel is narrating and you're getting all the background story of the ring. So, that being said, this whole sequence is giving you that same background story. But it's, you can definitely tell that the people who are acting it out are wearing what you would imagine to be like middle school or high school theater props, because the shadows make everything look very big and bulky and clunky, and it's really not the best quality that they could have done. Like, even for, you know, the 1970s with this, they could have gotten something a little better even for doing this shadow sequence. But that being said, it does give you all the basics that you need to know for how the ring comes into the possession of Frodo. Now, you get a lot of the writing that Tolkien does in the stories. Like, you get a lot of his lingo that is being used. But the problem is, like, the sequences that you get throughout the movie, They are choppy. Like, you're getting snippets here and there, and you're not getting the flesh of it all. So imagine you're just getting the taste test, but not the whole meal. All right, so you pretty much open up with the main storyline at Bilbo's 111th birthday party, and it is all of about 2 minutes long. And you really just get the gist of, all right, Bilbo's leaving. That's it. You don't get any other background going on there. Now, you do see Frodo and Gandalf be introduced in this scene as well. And, you know, they're about what you would expect. Gandalf looks like an old man. He's got a beard down to his belly button. And Frodo, he's, you know, just a young-looking hobbit. And yeah, that's basically our big intro. They're basically like, well, you know, Bilbo hasn't changed much over the last 60 years, and that's pretty much it. So we go back to Bilbo's house after, you know, he puts the ring on and, you know, shows everybody, just like, oh my god, where'd he go? Because, you know, the ring makes him disappear. So we're back at Bag End, the home of Bilbo, and Gandalf shows up. Now, I said that the backgrounds of this movie are actually quite good. Like, they're very beautifully done. There's a lot of artistry in them. The characters themselves and their designs do leave something to be desired. And also some of the movements that the artists gave these characters. Like, for instance, Gandalf, he kind of hobbles around and is like, I don't know if you would say twitchy or wriggling around when he walks. but he walks like an old man who's got like a really bad limp, even though he's just as nimble as someone who's, you know, 30 years old when you actually read the material. And he kind of flails about when he talks. He's like a very rambunctious Italian person, if you catch my meaning, because he's talking with his hands constantly, and it's kind of off-putting for the character, because he tries to talk like he's this grand actor upon a stage and just flailing about so that the people in the nosebleed section can see what he is doing, and it's a little off-putting. Now, something else to keep in mind when you're watching this movie, all the characters, they go straight to the point. Like, if someone's getting pissy about something, you know, they'll have their little tantrum, but then immediately at the snap of a finger, they are over it. And we see that with Bilbo when, you know, he is wanting to keep the ring, and then Gandalf tells him that, no, you need to leave it here for Frodo. So he's like, okay, fine, I'll just leave it. Meanwhile, he's had this thing and it's been corrupting his mind for, you know, decades. And he's just ready to give it up, you know, at the snap of his fingers. And yet, I will say the live action gets that scene a little bit better. But we fast forward, I guess it's about 17 years, according to the movie storyline. And Frodo is living in Bilbo's house since Bilbo no longer needs it. And Gandalf comes back after all this time and is basically like, okay, y'all, this is an evil ring. We need to find a way to get it somewhere to someone who can destroy it. And as we're walking down this path, you know, which is basically just surrounding the Shire, there's like, oh, this guy can go with you. And he just reaches into a bush and just pulls Samwise out of a bush because he was eavesdropping and, you know, just hearing things that he probably shouldn't hear about a Dark Lord and all of that. So that basically cuts to Merry and Pippin, who they're kind of just along for the ride. There's really not a whole lot of meat and potatoes that go along with these guys. It's very much just, oh, you know, these two random guys just showed up and they're going on the trip too. So there's not a whole lot that happens between when Merry and Pippin show up to help escort Frodo to Bree, you know, to the Inn of the Prancing Pony. Except, like, the one thing that I was, when you see it, you're just like, ugh, that's a little annoying. Anytime the hobbits are walking and they have cloaks on, they're kind of just sashaying around, like, you know, like just whooshing it around them, and it's kind of just, okay, that's a little much, guys. Can you just, like, let it hang there and just walk like a normal person? But, you know, that's what the artist wanted to do, that's what Bakshi wanted them to do, so okay, creative licensing with that. Now, when we're at the Inn of the Prancing Pony, this is where we see what you would meant. What we see at the Inn of the Prancing Pony is what you saw in, if you read the description that I gave the episode, guys who basically look like they had spray paint on them. Now, a lot of the movements and everything that are captured for the characters was actually done by recording real people doing things and then animating over top of them so you get the movements properly. That cannot be proven more correct than the Inn of the Prancing Pony scene, because what you are seeing here is fully animated hobbits and Strider when he gets introduced, or Aragorn. And then you see the patrons of the Inn of the Prancing Pony. Whether it's man, woman, dwarf, by that I mean actual little people and not like dwarfs like Gimli the dwarf. They are, you can clearly see, real people who have just been like glazed over very lightly with paint. and that's it. And but a really cool effect that you'll notice in some of these scenes is if there's fire or smoke or something like that, they act, you can see like real flames or vapors rising up like between you and the animated stuff that is happening in the scenes. So that's actually a really interesting effect. All right, let's see. Something else that I should mention is the Black Riders. When they're introduced, well, the first one on the journey from the Shire to Bree, that's, you know, when the hobbits are hiding in, like, I guess it would be a hole underneath a tree, and the Black Rider's, like, right above them, sniffing around and all that. The way he does it is, well, Bakshi, I mean, has the animators do it, is he's kind of like hobbling around, like twitching around, like you might see a ghost or a apparition of some kind in a horror movie do, and he's just like twitching around as he's walking all over the place, just like sniffing around, trying to see if he can get a hint of where the ring might be, or if it's close by or further away. And it's actually kind of creepy when he's on the screen. Otherwise, you're underneath the tree where the hobbits are, and they're kind of just like jerking around, like acting like they're cold and like shivering the whole time. Instead of being scared, they look more like they're like, holy my god, it's cold out here, I wish I had something more than just this cloak on me. But that's kind of what they did here. I guess you could get the impression that they're scared, but it looks more like they're cold to me. But so back in Bree, when the Black Riders show up in the middle of the night, everyone's asleep, you see what I would describe as psychedelic visuals. And this is primarily any time that the Black Riders are doing anything of any substance, such as horse chases, like on the race to get to the fords of Rivendell, like the river. There is like these psychedelic paint patterns, almost like oil paints that are in water floating around and swirling with each other. You kind of get backgrounds like that anytime that the Black Riders are doing anything. So the horse chases after Frodo, or back in Bree when they are hacking and stabbing and slashing into the beds where they think the hobbits are. So it's quite interesting visuals that you're getting at that point. And it only goes further on when you get later into the film. All right, so picking back up, when we continue, we are still finishing up this chase of the Black Riders after Frodo. So we get to the river, and this, as we find out, is the river of, you know, the elves. So their magic is protecting it. And this is when we get that great scene of the waters crashing down onto the Black Riders and sweeping them away, saving Frodo. But how safe is Frodo? Well, he's got the, you know, part of that blade that a Black Rider stabs him with earlier on that is working its way deeper into his body and trying to reach his heart to kill him and turn him into a wraith as well. Now, that's, of course, not a good thing. But he is able to be brought to Rivendell, where he receives his healing and recuperation in the house of Elrond. Elrond being, of course, you know, the king of the elves in this region of Middle-earth. So, when Frodo awakes a couple days later, he's reunited with everybody, you know, meaning his companions like Sam, Merry, Pippin, Aragorn, and now Legolas. And we get to the place where we find Bilbo. He is just hanging out with the elves. You know, anybody knows the Hobbit knows that he has been to Rivendell. He loves it there. They like him. So that's basically where he goes in his retirement. Now, the reunion between Bilbo and Frodo is, well, of course, it's heartwarming because, you know, they're family. They haven't seen each other in 17 years. But, of course, Bilbo wants to see the ring. Now, it's it is quite comical when Bilbo wants to see the ring, because he starts going all cross-eyed, his hands start fluttering about like he's almost having a muscle spasm or something, and yeah, it's visually definitely on the funny side. But, you know, he's just like, okay, so I can't be around the ring because I now understand how evil this thing is. So I'm sorry that, you know, this is all put on you now, but all right, let's see what we can find out. Because there is the Council of Elrond, where the people of Middle-earth that are being represented are going to decide what to do with the ring. Now, this is also where we get introduced to Gimli and to Boromir. Now, Boromir, for some reason, they decided to make him look like a Viking who's wearing, like, short shorts. So you get this guy with horned helmet, big bushy beard, like a bear skin cloak, and go-go boots and shorts. If that's not 70s Viking, I don't know what is. So, yeah. Now, Gimli, he just looks like a guy that you would expect to see in like any medieval period film, where he's just like the peasant wearing like just the regular clothes, the tunic, the pants, a sack looking hat. But he's got that big axe, so we still have that. All right, so the Council of Elrond goes relatively quickly. They basically decide we can't use it for anything helpful, so we need to take it to Mordor. We need to destroy it. Frodo volunteers, and then we get all the others who join in. So, on the journey, we basically get a narration just explaining who the characters all are, who are the Fellowship of the Ring. So, this goes on for, just a few minutes. And the dialogue that we get for the trip itself is just to decide, should we go through the Mines of Moria? Should we go this way? Should we go that way? Ultimately, we go to the mines. Now, in the mines, we still have the Watcher in the water before they go inside. We don't see the face or the mouth or anything. We just see these tentacles come shooting out of the water, trying to pull in Frodo. Boromir and Aragorn start hacking them away. So, fairly good action in this part of the movie. But once we're inside the mines, things slow down a little bit. Visually, everything is still pretty cool looking, but it's just a little slow paced. And the only real interesting thing that happens for the first 2/3 of the time that we're in the mines is, while the majority of the characters are asleep, we see these random green eyes just pop out at you. And we don't see who they belong to until later in the movie, but anybody who knows the story is very obviously going to be like, oh, Gollum. And we continue on the journey, and that's basically it for Gollum for a little while, until we get to the chamber where Gandalf finds the book of the dwarves who tried to basically recolonize Moria, and their demise at the hands of orcs who have basically taken up shop in the mines. So, it is after Gandalf reads the passage that, instead of drums, like you see in the live-action adaptation, we get horns, like the war horns of the orcs. They come barreling in. Our characters are able to fight off the group that attacked them first, and then they make their way for the bridge. And when all this is happening, we see the orcs, obviously. And the orcs, they are not really a great character design. They're shadowy. They look like, you know, guys in like a gorilla costume with like these shabby looking over the one shoulder tunics and like horned helmets. They have these glowing red eyes and like fangs. And they're almost all in shadow except for like splotches of green that like highlight their clothing in different areas of their bodies to show that there's some, you know, texture there. And that's about it. So we're seeing them fighting our characters. We get to the bridge when the Balrog shows up. Now the Balrog, they could have done a much, much better job with the Balrog. If you've seen this movie, or if you're going to see this movie after hearing this episode, you will know exactly what I mean when I talk about this Balrog. Basically, the guy who they would have gotten to be the model for this, it just looks like he wore a pair of really big bell-bottom jeans, had a really cheaply made lion's head mask on, and they strapped like two big triangular kites onto his back to act as wings. And that's what they used as a model. It's very flimsy, very bad. Like, the only impressive thing about the Balrog is the roar that they decided to use for him. And that's still not saying too much. But the fight is, you know, on par for an animated movie of this time. And, you know, it's interesting enough. You know, you got the sword clashing, but that's about it. And when the Balrog falls, of course, he takes Gandalf down with him, you know, whipping around his legs and yanking him down with his whip. And now, when Gandalf disappears down into the depths and we all, you know, he's dead, there's not really any mourning that happens with our characters. They basically get outside of the mines and just like, okay, let's go to Lothlorien. And that is really about it. Lothlorien is kind of a cheerful part of the movie. Yeah, I guess if you can say that the storyline has cheerful parts. You get a very, like, soprano singing going on. Like, it's a song for Gandalf, known as Mithrandir to the elves. And, you know, our characters are recuperating. They're, you know, doing a little weapons training. You know, Gimli gets to learn how to shoot a bow. Frodo is practicing sword fights with Aragorn. Boromir, he's sharpening up his very dinged up sword. He's got like notches that are like halfway into the blade in it. I don't know why they decided to give him such a beat up sword. He honestly should have just gotten a new one by now. So we go into that. The scene where Galadriel is doing the water mirror with Frodo and Sam. It's very fast. There's not a whole lot going on there. It's just very, we need to cover this from the story, and we need to move on. That's how it feels like for the people who made it. And, well, just like the majority of the movie, it's very fast-paced. You're not getting a lot of the emotion. It's very just choppy. Like, we need to cover these things, but we don't have to worry about connecting them too well. Now, we get onto the river journey from Lothlorien, getting closer on their way to Mordor. The river journey goes by pretty quick. You get some interesting visuals, like the gigantic statues with their arms outstretched. That's kind of cool. Not as cool as in the live action, of course, but yeah, still not bad. So we get to their camp out, which is, I think, near Amon Hen, and they're deciding which way to go next to get to Mordor, and Frodo goes off on his own because he needs to think things over. Boromir shows up, trying to convince Frodo to be like, hey, just loan me the ring, we can defeat Sauron, then we can go into Mordor and we can destroy this thing. And of course, Frodo says no. Boromir freaks out and chases him off. And yeah, that leaves us with a missing Frodo and everyone looking for him. Hey guys, I just want to take another break for just a couple seconds and tell you that if you go to my site on anchor.fm and look up the Bunker Movie Buff podcast, you guys, if you're feeling so inclined, I am going to be accepting listener support. So if you are enjoying the podcast and you feel like you want to give back in some fashion, you can go on there and you can add a monthly donation. I know I would greatly appreciate it to help me keep the podcast going and hopefully just make it better and better as time goes on. Now, you can basically do it in, you know, 99 cents, $4.99, or $9.99 a month. And, you know, it's just whatever you feel like you can do. And yeah, if you go and you want to do it, just know that from the bottom of my heart, I say thank you. And please keep coming back and listening. All right, let's get back to the show. All right, everyone. So, everybody who is our heroes of the film is looking for Frodo, who has gone missing after a confrontation with Boromir. So everyone just scatters about through the woods after Boromir telling them what he has done. So the hobbits immediately scatter and everyone's like, all right, everybody go after the hobbits. We need to keep them safe. So Aragorn and Sam start scurrying off in one direction, but Sam obviously can't keep up. He's a hobbit. He's got short legs compared to Aragorn, who's tall and has long legs. So he's like, you know what? Maybe I need to use my brain instead of trying to keep up. Frodo's going to the boats. He doesn't want anybody to get hurt. So I'm going to go to the boats and go with him. So, yeah. Frodo and Sam, they continue on the journey to Mordor. Meanwhile, Merry and Pippin, they are running through the woods trying to find their way to get to Frodo because, you know, they don't know where he is, so they're just looking all over. They run into a camp of orcs, the same types that we see when we are in the Mines of Moria. There's a big fire going and everything, and, you know, the orcs, they start, like, surrounding the hobbits, getting ready to, you know, start chopping them up or something. And out of nowhere, Boromir comes and starts hacking them up. So, yay, Boromir to the rescue, being all awesome and everything. But then he gets shot up with arrows, the way everybody who knows the story knows happens to him. It takes a grand total of 7 arrows to kill him in this. And, you know, before the final shot that puts him down, he is able to let out a couple bursts with his horn, signaling to Aragorn, Gimli, and Legolas where he is, and showing that he needs help, you know. But, you know, he gets shot the last arrow, he's down for the count. And the orcs grab Merry and Pippin after smacking them around a little bit, knocking them out, and just carry them off. So, yeah, this leads to the big death scene of Boromir, his funeral, where they set him off down the river in the one of the boats that they have. And, yeah. So then we get the chase scene, which Aragorn, Gimli, and Legolas are running after the orcs trying to save Merry and Pippin. Now, this is kind of a long scene. There's not really a lot of talking going on. But the animation, of course, the landscapes are great, but the characters themselves leave a little bit to be desired because, like, their faces just get discontorted and everything where they don't even look, like, realistic or anything like that. So it leaves a little to be desired. Like Legolas's face in particular. But like they even had Aragorn doing something goofy enough as like tripping over his own feet and falling to the ground. Not generally something you would associate with the character. Now, we then switch over to the orcs who carried off Merry and Pippin. And this is where we hear a lot more of their voices, like talking and everything, where you get like this weird, like, to their voices. And it's just like this, it's very off-putting hearing them talk. It's like you can understand them, but they could have done a better job trying to get voices for these guys because it's a little much. But anyway, so we're with them, and then we see the Riders of Rohan. The orcs have gone into the Gap of Rohan, making their way through Rohan to get to Isengard, to Saruman. Now, the Riders are a lot like the people that we see back at the Inn of the Prancing Pony. They're obviously real people that were recorded with camera and then basically just had a spray painting done over them to make them look at least a little animated. So we have this chase scene of the Riders coming down on the orcs. There's a big standoff. Then, you know, we get this fight that happens where the orcs are getting butchered. Merry and Pippin manage to slip out and they make their way into Fangorn Forest. Now, I am going to diverging follow that because there's really only just a few sentences to say about when they get into Fangorn. Then we get back into the main story with Rohan. So Merry and Pippin make their way into the forest and it's like, well, it's awfully dark in here. I don't feel real safe. All right, let's try and get our bearings and let's climb this hill right here. So they climb this hill and they're talking about how, oh, it's actually pretty nice looking around the forest when you get in the sunlight that's, you know, shining on this hill. And you hear this big booming voice. So I'm like, oh, that's uncommonly kind of someone who enters the forest to say. All right, come to find out. In the next scene, you just see Merry and Pippin sitting in these two gigantic hands and they're talking to Treebeard. Now, Treebeard, as my girlfriend would say, is designed in a cute way. Like, he's not, like, menacing looking, but he's not, like, childish looking. He's what you would expect in a 1970s cartoon for a tree being. So, yeah, that's pretty much the end of where Merry and Pippin are in the story. They never get brought back in. So, yeah, it would have to be, you know, the time period for Return of the King, that book in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, where they actually come back into the story if we follow Bakshi's timeline. But anyway, back to Rohan. So we have Aragorn, Gimli, and Legolas. They are, of course, still trying to trail Merry and Pippin, and they get into Fangorn Forest. They think that Saruman, the evil wizard of Isengard, is coming up on them. So they draw their weapons, ready to attack, and this person ignites the weapons on fire magically, and it is revealed to be Gandalf. So the reunion does happen. It's just like, oh, okay, so they have him back. He describes his fight with the Balrog, how he did die but came back from the dead. And there's like, all right, so we need to head to Edoras, the capital of Rohan. We need to get the king there on our side so that we can fight off this army that I know is coming from Isengard. There's, you know, 10,000 plus orcs that are going to be making their way here. So we need to draw them away, have a longer battle so we can be a distraction for Frodo to destroy the ring. Which is a very sound plan. But once they get to Edoras, we meet Grimer Wormtongue. He's this chubby-faced little guy. He's probably no bigger than Gimli. And when you first see him, it's a little creepy about what's going on because he's like petting King Théoden's long, luscious Santa Claus-looking beard, like if Santa's beard was the length of, you know, one of the guys from ZZ Top, you know, down to his belly button. But it's like caressing it, like it's, ooh, is the it? There's a little something not right about it. That whole scene. So yeah. Something else is we see Eowyn, but we're never really told her name, but only if you know the story do you actually recognize her. But she has no speaking part, she's kind of just a background person, and you never see her past the Edoras throne room. But Gandalf has a confrontation with Grimer and Théoden, the King of Rohan, and we are able to get Théoden on our side. And, you know, Grimmie, he basically runs off, he's kicked out of the kingdom, blah, blah, blah. But we have Théoden and his riders, along with Gandalf, Aragorn, Gimli, and Legolas, making the way to Helm's Deep. Now, any variation of, or interpretation of the Two Towers storyline, I absolutely love the Battle of Helm's Deep. I love Peter Jackson's adaptation in the live action, which I do plan on doing those films at some point. Maybe not right away, because we're just getting through these animated versions. We don't need to have a rehashing of the same stuff right now. Maybe in a year or two, though. Alright, so we get to Helm's Deep. The design of Helm's Deep in this animated version, I like. It is still basically nestled between two gigantic cliff walls, but there's a series of like three walls and like four or five towers. It's actually a little more imposing than the Peter Jackson version, which is basically a big wall with the one keep on the one side. So the battle itself was actually really well done in this animated version. All right, so the Rohirrim, the people of Rohan, the warriors, they are lined up on the walls and everything, and we see the enemy start to approach, and we are seeing wolves, like almost like saber-tooth wolves by their design, because they got these humongous canines. They come charging in first as guess like a skirmishing party type of deal. They attack some of the Rohirrim that are like easily accessible because they're not like on the walls, but you know, they fight those back. But then the main orc army comes marching in, and they did a really good job showing this march to battle. Like, they've got this really imposing, like evil sounding music playing. There's a lot of imagery of skulls and weapons, the orcs' faces being like these weird shadows with glowing eyes and like green streaks going all over. So it actually, and there's smoke that's like between you and the screen. It's like kind of a weird effect that they do throughout the movie, and but it just works. So you're just like, oh wow, okay, this is looking pretty cool. All right, meanwhile, we're going to take a sidestep to Frodo and Sam. Now, these guys, they're trying to make their way to Mordor. They see the mountain like glowing off in the distance, like the far distance. And then Frodo and Sam, they get a sense they're being followed, which naturally they are. They have been since the Mines of Moria. And we get the introduction proper of Gollum. Now, this visual of Gollum that we get is actually not that bad. If you remember how I described him in my episode on The Hobbit, you'll remember that Gollum was kind of like just a frog with a loincloth, essentially. In this, he's actually looking more humanoid and everything. Like, you can see that he's got like human-looking teeth. He's got like pointed ears like the hobbits have. The only thing that kind of separates him from the hobbits is his skin is like a dark charcoaly blackish gray, and he's wearing a loincloth, but it blends in with his skin, so it almost looks like his junk is swinging around or he's got a tail fluttering behind him. and those glowing green eyes. They're probably one of the weirdest features that he has, but it still really works. Now, the main issue that I would say I have with this interpretation of Gollum is the voice. He sounds a bit like kind of a creepy Dracula, where there's a twist of a pervert in there. He's just, the way that he talks is just a little odd, and he sounds too eloquent to have been a creature that's been corrupted by the one ring of the Dark Lord Sauron, you know? And, yeah, it still works. You get the weird monologues where he's talking to himself because he's got the whole split personality disorder from his time of possessing the ring and all that. So it's all the Smeagol, my precious, all of that. But yeah, so the main thing that we're going to get there is that he's going to start leading the hobbits to Mordor. He's going to take them down secret paths that only he knows, which we get the hinting about, you know, Shelob the Spider saying, they're like, oh, we can get her to do it. And then we takes the precious. And that's basically where we leave off with Frodo and Sam for the movie. So, switching gears once again, we go back to Helm's Deep. And we get the battle actually beginning. Arrows are flying. Orcs and men are going down from the arrow shots. We have the orcs putting ladders up on the walls, and they are climbing, and we're fighting on the wall tops, and people get thrown off the sides. Very well done, this whole sequence here. So, yeah. But eventually, we're going to get a sight of the Tower of Orthanc, the Tower of Saruman, in Isengard. And we see these like flare rocket looking things that are like magic spells, you can assume, just flying and traveling, you know, the hundreds of miles between the two locations, just, you know, lighting up the sky and everything. It's actually kind of interesting, until one of them blows a hole through the wall of the Helm's Deep. And then, of course, the army goes pouring through this opening, and the Rohirrim have to pull back. You see Aragorn and Legolas and Gimli, like, rushing to the, like, gateway that gets them into the caverns and the caves underneath the mountains. And then they kind of just hold up there for a while. And you see Théoden come in talking to Aragorn, saying, like, you know what, I'm not going to die here like a badger in a trap. When the sun rises in the morning, me and my men, we're going to charge out. We're going to die as warriors. You and your guys are welcome to join us if you want. And yeah, that is the plan. So everybody the next morning goes charging out. They're hacking and slashing their way through the enemy. But then the, you know, maybe two dozen or so that are left at this point, they're encircled by the orcs. They're slowly being, you know, encroached on, like the orcs are moving in slowly for the kill. And Théoden just lets out these very old man sounding yells, but he's, you know, digging deep to get his voice to just project, and he's just calling out for Gandalf, because, you know, Gandalf isn't there. He is out looking for more warriors to come in for the battle. But of course, just the way like any movie is going to play in these types of scenarios, here comes Gandalf the White Wizard with a whole bunch of Rohirrim riders just charging in across the field, and, you know, they just start hacking and slashing their way across, rejoining up with Théoden and the remains of his guys and Aragorn, Legolas, and Gimli. And yeah, that is where the movie is going to end, with a narration saying, you know, the forces of evil were driven from the face of Middle-earth forever, and, you know, Gandalf, we just get a slow-motion image of him throwing his sword up in the air in victory. Meanwhile, you know, which is a nice little way to cut it and end, but the movie leaves a lot of open questions that you're not getting any answers to. Like, how are they able to drive away all the forces of evil? Frodo and the ring are still out there. It's not been destroyed. What's happening to Merry and Pippin with this Treebeard creature? Like, nothing has been resolved. So that's a big issue with the movie. And Bakshi, he never got the chance to finish the story. He basically just stops where the Two Towers ends, leaving the whole third act of the story, the whole third book, from actually being done. So, yeah, we have this opening for something to happen. All right. So, that is the movie. Now, I would rate this on a scale of 1 to 5. Honestly, I'd have to give it like a 3. And I will tell you why. It is a 3 because, well, it's choppy in the storyline. Some stuff just does not flow. And nothing is resolved. And there was never any continuation of Bakshi's vision for the story. The things that save this movie, I think, is the backgrounds that are given, because they're beautifully done. The creativeness for certain characters, like the Black Riders with the psychedelic backgrounds and things like that, that was very interesting. Just the creativity that they had to with a limited budget, a small, very limited budget, that I have to give props for. That was very well done. And execution, they made it work. Now, if you're a big fan, you know, you'll just like the nostalgia of this movie. If you're trying to introduce kids to the whole thing, you know, these animated movies are a decent way to try and introduce kids to the storyline, to at least pique their interest. Then maybe you can, you know, read The Hobbit with them to help get them into the books. And then maybe when they're older, you know, they can read the books on their own, including the Lord of the Rings trilogy, the Silmarillion, Beren and Lúthien, Children of Húrin, all that stuff, which would be fantastic. So, this movie, while it is choppy, it's still not a bad way to introduce it to someone who maybe just appreciates older style animation, or they're just a young kid, just to get their interest piqued. But, alright, that is all the time that I have today, so I want to thank you for coming and listening again, and I hope that you will be joining me in the future. If you have any suggestions for future movies or any comments that you want to make, please feel free to go to my site on anchor.fm. And you can look up the podcast, you can follow, we'll subscribe. Let me know what you think. I'm always willing to make any changes that I think will work. And, you know, maybe there's something you can think of that I have not to help improve the quality of my podcast. All right. Until next time, be safe out there. I hope everyone has a great 2 weeks, and I will see you next time.